Madison, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Really excited to celebrate Earth Week with y'all. We've got a stacked lineup here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Every day, a new and different expert, or as is the case today, a friend visiting us again to help us understand conservation and the protection of our natural resources, which every Wisconsinite enjoys and is just baked into our DNA here in the state. I would like to thank, and certainly my next guest, no exception, Melissa Johnson of Wisconsin's Green Fire. And I love, you know, when I go to the website, Melissa, it's right on the top line. Wisconsin's Green Fire supports our conservation legacy by promoting science-based management of natural resources. Now, that's something we all can get behind, right?
Well, you would think so. If we're going to make a sound policy decision, somehow science, facts, data, truth is really important to underpin that. So we're just not throwing a dart at the wall and hoping for the best.
Yeah, indeed. I don't like the throw dart hope approach to public policy, having spent some time in government. It rarely turns out well. And conservation and preserving our natural resources here, really, truly something that is a long-term policy set of objectives that I do think it needs to be way less politicized in the state, because it's just part of what, that's how most of us here in the state recreate, whether you're in an urban area or up in rural Wisconsin. I reference the Apostle Islands all the time. Most Wisconsinites I know at some point in the year will be outside trying to relax in some way, shape, or form.
You know, it's interesting. We talk about natural resources and nature and, you know, all the things we love to do, whether it's going for a walk, going for a bike ride, just sitting and watching a bird, whatever that may be. I was on a webinar recently, and Dylan Jennings he's an Indigenous person, and he was giving a presentation on their perspective, or at least his perspective, because it is a little bit different from tribe to tribe. And he was talking about the term natural resources. He said, we don't have a word natural resources because it's life. It's just life. So our resources are life. And it was, what an amazing thought. If we started thinking about natural resources as living in life, I think we would be making different decisions. And another thought, I learned this recently, that planning for future forests to ensure we have not only forests to recreate in, but also forests for our timber industry, our lumber industry, all of those things, that planning, when it starts now, we have to plan for climate change, because we know that that's going to happen. And those species that we plant now have to be resilient enough to thrive 50 years, 100 years from now, not just start growing now, but 100 years out.
I think that's such a fundamental, sometimes miss that people have, because it's gotten so politicized. What I mean to say about that is, listen, I'll be the first to admit that from time to time, Melissa, politicians and business leaders can be somewhat short-sighted. In other words, it's the next election cycle, or it's the next set of financial statements, or how are my shareholders happy? All that kind of stuff. And that doesn't always lend itself. I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican, whatever it is. It doesn't always lend itself to the public policies, to decision-making that really does serve what I think is the majority of Wisconsinites' best interest. And it's exactly this sort of pre-planning and thinking carefully based in good science, as best as we know, and science evolves, we learn new things, we incorporate them to try to prepare what we all enjoy and what is essential to all of our well-being for the next 20, 50, 100 years.
Well, isn't that what Gaylord Nelson was getting at the first Earth Day? Yeah. And what's interesting there is he did try to get policymakers and leaders to pay attention to what he saw was a critical need to bring about clean air, clean water, biodiversity, you know, the protections that we now enjoy.
Yes.
And they wouldn't listen, but it was the people he figured they were the ones with the power, and he brought together the people on the first Earth Day to start doing those things. And so policymakers play a role, but I think all too frequently we, you know, people become disenchanted, disenfranchised, you know, busy, whatever the case. They're the real power, right? Yes. They're the real power. We, as a collective, a web of life around the world, we can still do this.
Yes. And I think understanding that sometimes we've got to see beyond how politicians are using the issue or issues or conservation here and to say, hey, do I enjoy the outdoors? Is this part of my family's tradition? Is this part of what I hold dear as a Wisconsinite? And if so, where can I get the best information possible about how to continue Gaylord Nelson and Wisconsin's legacy of conservation? I love that Wisconsin's Green Fire adopts that language. Listen, folks, I am interviewing and talking with Melissa Johnson of Wisconsin's Green Fire. It is Earth Week. We're celebrating it. If you want to do a tiny little thing to help your conservation efforts, you can text using the app and you will be entered to win one of three. I'm giving away trash pickers this week, Melissa, so that when folks are out on the trails, you can pick some trash. I got one for myself. I'm loving it. Again, use the app, text on in. We're going to get you entered to win one of the three trash pickers I'm giving away. Be sure to include your name, cell phone number, and email. Also, I'm going to green light starting now the 14th caller to 855-75-4842. We'll enjoy two tickets to the other great Wisconsin tradition this Saturday at 7:10, the Milwaukee Brewers. That's caller 14 at 855-752-4842. Games at 7:10 playing the Yankees here at AmFam Field. But let's get back to Melissa Johnson. You pulled out two issues that I thought were just fascinating, and then I thought the vast majority of Wisconsinites are probably concerned about. If they don't know about them, they need to know about them. And that was the first one was you wanted to talk a bit about illegally injured or killed large non-game birds. What are non-game birds? And tell us what's going on here.
So non-game birds are things like eagles and hawks and turkey vultures and herons and cranes. So anything that we don't take out a license for. So if we're taking out a license for ducks and geese and turkey, those are game birds. The other birds that I just listed are the non-game birds. And what happened in Wisconsin's Green Fire a couple of years ago, we were made aware that there was a growing trend or discussion from rehabbers that they were seeing an increase in injuries, illegal injuries, and deaths of these non-game birds. People shooting eagles. Imagine that. I can't even, just, it's unfathomable to me. Yeah. Taking pot shots at owls, again, unfathomable to me. But in order to do the science, get the facts, get the data, our researcher, Carrie Beheller, is our lead researcher there, followed up by Tom Hauge, both wildlife biologists, and they started pulling together the data. Let's understand the trends. Let's get all of this information, because otherwise it's just a lot of disparate data. We're trying to better understand that because we want to be able to recommend policies on how to, number one, keep track of this. Number two, if people are out there with their guns taking pot shots at eagles, we need to find a way to enforce the law and prosecute them. And then also, how do we better track data so that we're taking care of this type of wildlife?
It's so important. I mean, when I read your brief synopsis of the issue, I've been lucky enough to spend some time in the summers up on Shawnee Lake, and there's a big eagle's nest. It's clearly a nest. You can see the eagle. Yeah. And I can believe that someone would shoot an eagle. I find it just morally reprehensible, let alone a snowy owl or, you know, whatever else, you know, cranes, herons. We've got these marshes that we've tried so valiantly to protect. And thinking about the migratory bird patterns and the loss of ecosystem and the changing of those patterns now.
Right.
So critical. To find out more about this, Melissa, and how people might help, or if they're seeing someone engaging in illegal hunting of these non-game birds, where should they go to find out more information?
Well, if you want to find more information about our research project, phase one is two. We are fundraising to get enough money to do the research for phase two. So phase one's done, phase two. And you can find information there at wigreenfire.org. Lots of info there. And we would love the help in helping make this research possible. If someone witnesses an illegal act, they should call law enforcement.
So call 911 if you see, if you've got concerns, if you're seeing, and I'm going to expand a little bit beyond the non-game birds. If you see traps that you think are illegal, there's some of that that goes on. You can call the DNR, try to geolocate where you are, and let the DNR know, let your local law enforcement know.
Right.
And I have to give a big shout out to local law enforcement in particularly around our lakes. And we're going to talk more about our lakes, but I actually, this is super embarrassing, but I like to tell the embarrassing stories when I'm on the radio because this is helpful. Last summer out on Shawano Lake and ran out of gas.
Oh.
I kid you not, right? And there was, Shawano Lake is huge if you live up in that part of the the state, and there weren't sort of nearby boaters to flag down. We're just floating out there. It also has a pretty brisk current, if you will. So we were very fortunate. I was out with a friend of mine, called up law enforcement, and within 30 minutes, there came one of the sheriff's deputies out on a boat, helped fill us up. I really want to give a shout out to law enforcement in some of these counties where there's a lot of outdoor recreation going on. Boy, do they get called to all kinds of stuff. We're going to talk more about wake boats and their impact on lake ecosystems when we come back after these very brief messages with my special guest celebrating Earth Week with me and all of you, Melissa Johnson of Wisconsin's Green Fire. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back after these brief messages. Welcome back, Wisconsin, and happy Earth Week. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. In celebration of Earth Week, I'm giving away three trash pickers. It's those long arm things with the little end that you squeeze and it picks up the stuff so you don't even have to get close to it. I take one along when I'm walking on one of the wonderful Ice Age Trail areas in Milwaukee County. If you would like one too, please text via the app your name, email, and phone number. We'll get you entered to win. We're going to give away three of them this week. But my special guest this half hour is Melissa Johnson of Wisconsin's Green Fire, whose purpose is to support Wisconsin's conservation legacy by promoting science-based management of natural resources. Again, I think that's something we can all get behind. Your second issue that we're going to dive into right now was really interesting to me. It makes perfect sense. And it's the impact of wake boats on lake ecosystems. Again, this is something that you all are doing research on. Tell us a little bit about it.
Sure. And just to for your viewers who may not know, wake boats are different than your typical water ski boat, fishing boat. These are very large boats. And they produce in their wake, a true wake that someone can actually surf on. So it is a big, big wave. And they do that by taking on a lot of ballast. So a lot of water. So they sit deeply in the water. They're incredibly powerful engines. And they, as they take off, they produce this massive wave. So it started becoming clear that if we were going to better understand this topic and the impact to the lake ecosystems, we needed to do some research because there's not a lot of information out there right now. And what was happening is we were seeing some legislators taking the dart and throwing it at the wall. And again, for a science-based organization, we were going, oh, maybe that's not good. So we hired a research fellow, a doctoral student at UW-Madison, and his expertise is in limnology, so lake systems. And he did a literature review of what he could find as far as peer-reviewed data out there on wake boats. And because this is becoming an issue not only in the United States, but in Australia and in Canada, so around the world, he pulled these things together. From that information, then he compiled this report. His name is David Ortiz. I want to acknowledge his expertise. He's a fabulous doctoral student now working to get into a postdoc program. Any program would be lucky to have him. And but his work really focused on trying to figure out how what happens to that lake when these things take off and they bottom out, producing this massive wave, rushing up against shorelines, disturbing nesting birds. And that's what he did.
And I want to emphasize the importance of getting the literature review completed first. Mm-hmm. So for folks who haven't spent some time in post-undergraduate world or doing deep sort of academic research, a literature review is you go out there and you find out what other scientists have published in peer-reviewed journals, again, which have to meet a certain standard of research rigor and those kinds of things. So what it's effectively like, what is the state of the art? What is the state of the science on a particular topic? And then with that literature review, you can identify gaps in the research. You can identify certain takeaways, commonalities, those kinds of things. Again, the research fellow's name is David Ortiz. Again, folks, this isn't your speedboat to take your kids water skiing. We're talking about very large, largely shipping boats that are moving massive amounts of stuff around that take on so much ballast, which is water, to bring them down a certain amount of water in a lake, that therefore are, because of their largesse and how deep they're sitting in the water, throw off surfable wake. Again, this ain't your water ski boat. So nobody's going after the water ski boats. Don't get alarmed.
No, and we want everyone to recreate, right? Whether regardless of the kind of boat. But in Wisconsin, we have a thing called the public trust doctrine, which is actually written in our constitution. And the constitution of Wisconsin says the lakes, the waterways of our great state belong to all of us, not the guy with the biggest boat or woman with the biggest boat, as these tend to be on some of our small lakes, but everywhere, everyone. So whether you want to just get on a little floaty or a paddle boat or go fishing or take your kids water skiing. The challenge is because these sit so deeply in the water, if that lake is only 10 feet deep, what you're doing is you're turning up the sediment in that lake. And anyone knows, a lake that is really muddy, is that a fun place to recreate? You're resedimenting that water. And in that sediment are important nutrients. And they're also spawning habitats for walleye and all kinds of game fish that the Northwoods relies on. For folks coming up to do that fishing. And then this wake that comes out, this massive wave, as it rushes ashore, it destroys people's properties. It can disrupt nesting birds, primarily loons, who are very susceptible anyway. And then, of course, it's disrupting other boaters and their ability to enjoy a lake. So our data is showing that there is a disruption to that lake ecosystem, and we need to have limits on where and how they can be used.
If you'd like to find out about your local lake, especially in some of our northern counties with particularly fragile lakes, smaller lakes, you can go ahead and contact the DNR. You can contact probably your local sheriff's department. They'll have information about that if you want to know, hey, what are the rules here? And again, you can always go to wigreenfire.org. That's wigreenfire.org to find out more about Wisconsin's Green Fire and the great conservation work that they are doing to preserve all of the natural resources that we all enjoy in Wisconsin for me and you and all of our families. My deep thanks to Melissa Johnson from Wisconsin's Green Fire for joining me to celebrate some of the great research work that Wisconsin's Green Fire is doing and Earth Week with all of you. It's always great to have you, Melissa. I hope you can come back soon.
Oh, it would be my pleasure, Maggie. Thank you so much for taking this time.
Absolutely. Stay put, everybody. First of all, congrats to Andrew Kay winning those Brewers tickets. I've got much more coming up for you after your farm update. Going to tell a little story about an ecosystem that I once visited in high school that I had never been to, not in the United States. You're not going to, when I'm telling stories, you don't want to miss that stuff. That's the good stuff. I might share other embarrassing facts, like getting stranded in a boat because there's not enough gas in it on Shawano Lake last August. You know, those kinds of things that crop up. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere. And again, my thanks to Melissa Johnson of Wisconsin's Green Fire. We'll be back in just a moment.
Crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy, crazy for feeling so blue.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy Earth Week, everybody. If you would like to be entered to win a trash picker to take with you on all your nature hikes and outdoor activities here in this beautiful state of Wisconsin, use our app and text my wonderful producer, Anya. Give her your name. Say hello, of course. Thank her for all she does, but give her your name, your email address, and your cell phone number. We'll get you entered to win. Going to give three of those away this week. Talking with Melissa Johnson last half hour from Wisconsin's Green Fire about a couple of issues that they're researching, which is the hunting and illegal killing of non-game birds like eagles and owls and cranes and loons, herons. Shocks me that people do this, if not surprising. The reality of it's still a bit depressing. Then we also talked about how huge wake boats, those that have massive ballast and throw off a wake that's big enough to surf in, are really dangerous and destructive for lake ecosystems, often stirring up an incredible amount of sediment, disturbing the nutrients, disturbing the various fish and other wildlife and things that grow in sediment, etc. And it reminded me, and I wanted to share with all of you, some time that I spent in high school in Honduras, and not on mainland Honduras. I traveled as part of a group called Earth Watch. I had a scholarship from General Electric, if you can believe that, how cool. Earthwatch and GE, through my high school, Rufus King, sent me for weeks down to this tiny chain of islands, Isla de Bahia, in the Mediterranean, off the eastern coast of Honduras. It's the Bay Islands. What the Bay Islands are incredibly famous for are their reefs. Not a lot of people know about them. And these reefs, scuba divers will often say, actually rival the Great Barrier Reef in Australia, which is really something. Mediterranean, yes. East Coast. So Atlantic, sort of one of the, not Mediterranean, of course, the Caribbean. Oh,
there we go.
Somebody give me a globe. Anya was like, Maggie, do you know your geography, you weirdo? Yes, the Caribbean off the east coast of Honduras. Thanks, Anya, for helping me not look like a total idiot on the air. So the Bay Islands, I get sent down there. I was working with anthropological researchers from the University of California, Santa Barbara, which I believe are the slugs, incidentally. T-shirt for them made an appearance in Pulp Fiction. Went down there, and here's what we were doing. It's called rapid rural research, which is you walk around with a waterproof pen and you actually sketch out just a hand-drawn map of roads. And we would very politely, and we had training about how to dress, how to interact with folks that were born and live in the Bay Islands. And would ask them very nicely if we could talk with them about where they got their food and their fresh water and the like. And as part of that research project, what was the meta point of that was, how are the Bay Islands changing as bigger and bigger docks were getting put in on one side of the islands? And so these bigger and bigger cruise ships and other vessels were starting to dock, starting in the probably like early 80s, late 70s. So portions of the reef there were getting dredged so these larger vessels could get through. And it was also impacting the culture, the traditions of native Bay Islanders. And it was a really interesting and fascinating, unique culture that didn't really have a strong echo of mainland Honduras or Hondurans. Because the Bay Islands had been used as a pirateering base, as an outpost for the slave trade, the commoditization of human beings. And so the culture there, racially and otherwise, was very unique. People spoke English. That was the language on the Bay Islands, not Spanish as it was in mainland Honduras. So I had this incredibly unique, humbling, eye-opening experience as a 16-year-old down there with researchers from UCSB. And listening to Melissa talk about our fragile lakes in the state of Wisconsin and how these wake boats, these wake vessels, huge vessels, can impact those ecosystems, I couldn't help but to have that remind me of my time in Honduras. By the way, I think my parents were scared out of their wits to let me get unaccompanied on a plane. I missed my transfer in Miami. By the way, that airport is huge. You do not want to run through Miami International with a backpack on your back trying to make a transfer. And I had to fly from Miami to Tegucigalpa and then from Tegus into Roatan, which was the largest of the Bay Islands. Meet up with some researchers, hanging out with college kids. Beers were like a nickel. They don't have an enforced drinking age on Roatan, I'm just saying. But a lot of credit to my parents for letting me go and have that experience. So eye-opening. I learned so much. Thought I was going to be an anthropologist for a while because, wow. The study of human culture and history and how we relate to one another. But what I thought I would do is just not only share that reflection with all of you, but point out that scientists just last week, this is April 15th, last week, 8 days ago, from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration declared that the world is yet again experiencing a global bleaching event. That is destroying coral reefs. This is the fourth of its kind. If you don't know what this means, bleaching is bad. during long spells of raised temperatures and ocean temperatures, much, much hotter than they've ever been in recorded scientific history. The relationship between the coral and the algae that live inside the coral starts to break down. And the algae is what the coral feeds on. Coral reefs are living things. It's not a rock outcropping. And it gives that algae, different types of algae, helps give coral reefs their beautiful, brilliant color. And they attract all different kinds of fish and other species. Incredibly biodiverse. And so when you see bleached coral, that's not yet dead coral. That is coral starving to death. Right now, there is mass bleaching happening in coral reefs in the Atlantic, the Pacific, and the Indian Oceans, including along the lines of Florida and the Caribbean and Honduras and the Great Barrier Reef. By the way, the first time we saw a global bleaching event of this scale was two summers after I was in Honduras. It was the summer of 1998. And so what we're seeing now is that these bleaching events are happening with greater frequency, and each time they occur, it's more acute. This is not good. Coral reefs in many places, not only are they a tourism industry draw, as they are in Honduras and Australia and other places, but they're seawalls. They're nature's seawalls. They act as a natural barrier to flooding events, even hurricanes, major weather events. So this is very bad. Coral reefs are also home to a quarter of all marine species, including most of the fish that humans eat at one point in time. Really important in the Florida Keys and other Caribbean adjacent states. But I wanted to share, as I often do, some good news, not all doom and gloom. There is apparently a reef off the coast of Cambodia that scientists have been studying that is, frankly, teeming with life. This was unexpected. And this phenomenon, they're talking about, so a spawning that happens typically once a year. And this is large chunks of coral start puffing out hundreds of like these pearl-sized balls. Some are pink, some are red, orange, yellow. And the ocean sort of glows when this happens. It looks like something either from outer space or truly miraculous if you get a chance to ever witness it. And then the balls float away. It's called spawning, and it's how coral reefs reproduce. Each ball is a bundle of eggs and sperm from an individual coral colony. And different colonies of the same species somehow know how to spawn on the same day at the same time. Can you believe that? Like, how is, wow. So their eggs and sperm can form and meet and form and make baby coral. And it is incredibly hard to observe this because it's so rare, right? It's not like they send you an Outlook invite. Hey, this is the spawning evening. Please show up, scientists, right? And it happens once a year and often only for a very few minutes. And bleached coral, because it's dying, is less likely to spawn. Yet in March of this year, a team of marine biologists in Cambodia witnessed this event. Massive spawning event off the coast of Cambodia. This is in the Gulf of Thailand. Several different kinds of coral filled the water with pearls. That is incredible. If you'd like to check out some YouTube on this, the team of researchers is Fauna and Floral International. fauna and I'm going to say it right, I swear. Fauna and Flora International. It's an environmental group. And they captured it on video. This is, it looks like it's snowing underwater. It's really amazing. And so the reality is that since the 50s, we've lost about half the world's coral reefs. And if the world continues to warm by another degree and a half Celsius relative to what the temperatures in the world were before the Industrial Revolution, we could see 70 to 90% of the coral reefs eliminated. But these reefs in Cambodia and the broader East Asian region appear to be thriving. Now, perhaps they're more resilient to warming. Scientists are trying to figure out why are they doing well on a relative basis. And hopefully that will provide us the secret to helping reefs in other parts of the world. This, to me, emphasizes the importance of what organizations like Wisconsin's Green Fire are doing. That research matters, that surveying literature, that combining scientific knowledge is so important. So not only do I want to call y'all to vote and to care about these things, especially during Earth Week, but to encourage your elected officials to listen to and respect scientists, to not disregard and to understand that our collective best interests as Wisconsinites and Americans are tied to helping conserve these precious resources and things like coral reefs. I like to eat fish, not just perch and walleye either. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked. I got more coming up in just a minute. I'm going to share with you some more sound that relates to our first topic of the day and how it's expanding and potentially morphing into restrictions on who may be a public school teacher. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Back with more in just a moment. Beyond the moon.
Keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves.
What's up, Wisconsin? Welcome back. Last segment of the day for me. I'm your host, Maggie Dawn, joined by Anya Esther in the booth. Got one more segment today to qualify for that free trash picker. Text us via the app. Give us your name, your email address, and cell phone number. We'll get you entered to win. Going to give away three of those in honor of Earth Week. Spent the first hour today talking about book bans. And had a lot of callers, I think, very accurately call out that this is about perhaps a minority of Americans dictating what the rest of us have access to, what information the rest of us have access to, effectively dictating morality and religion from a minority position. That ain't the way it's supposed to work. We had a caller point out and listen to some sound from the artist Pink that made some analogies to the thought control, the mind control, the propaganda that began to crop up back in Germany in the mid-30s and the book burnings that happened there. And those book burnings eventually morphed into genocide at a scale that we've never seen in human history before. And the book burning, the dots, the connections between the book burning and the genocide included eventually people saying, oh, well, these people do not deserve to be part of our society. They don't deserve the same rights as the rest of us. They're subhuman. They're diseased. We're hearing that rhetoric already, frankly, with an alarming and increasing frequency and acuteness from the former MAGA president, now criminal defendant sitting every day in a courtroom in Lower Manhattan, falling asleep and apparently having some issues with flatulence. I'll cover that tomorrow on the show. You won't want to miss that. But it's not just the former MAGA president. He is establishing a way of approaching politics that embraces the othering, the denial of the humanity, the denial of dignity to others, and saying these people don't deserve rights. They don't deserve dignity. They're not part of our society. And last week, Governor Greg Abbott of Texas embraced this language, and somebody actually caught him on tape. This is going to be cut number 6. This is April 19th, Texas Governor Greg Abbott talking to the young conservatives of Texas.
Just up the street from where we are right now is Lewisville, Texas. In Lewisville, Texas, in the high school, recently, as in just a month ago, they had a high school teacher who was a man who would go to school dressed as a woman in a dress, high heels, and makeup. Now, what do you think is going through the mind of the students that's in that classroom? Are they focusing on the subject that this person is trying to teach? I don't know. What I do know are these two things. One is this person, a man, dressing as a woman, in a public high school in the state of Texas. He's trying to normalize the concept that this type of behavior is okay. This type of behavior is not okay. And this is the type of behavior that we want to make sure we end in the state of Texas.
This type of behavior, which is a person showing up in their workplace as themselves, is not okay. This is the type of behavior we want to make sure we end in the state of Texas. Human beings aren't illegal in their true identities. Human beings aren't animals. This rhetoric that denies the humanity of other human beings, that denies them the same employment opportunities, that denies them the freedom to express who they are, the ideas that they have, and the way that they choose to identify themselves and dress, and the way that they choose to be addressed, both in name and gender, is suppression of free speech. It is a violation of our First Amendment right. And it is yet another brick on the pathway to intolerance. The same pathway that begins with the banning of books and the burning of books and saying that certain people aren't human. Certain people don't deserve the right to speak or be themselves. Certain ideas are not acceptable. Greg Abbott, last week, this type of behavior, being a transgendered person, this type of behavior is not okay. It is the type of behavior we want to make sure we end in the state of Texas. How exactly, Governor Abbott, do you propose to do that? How do you end transgender people, Greg Abbott? Because transgender people have existed for the entirety of recorded human history. So how do you end that? Do you round them up, sir? Do you put them in prison alongside the librarians who dare acknowledge their existence? How do you end transgender people, Governor Abbott? We have to ask more of our elected leaders, regardless of your moral beliefs or your faith beliefs about the LGBTQIA community. They are our friends, our neighbors, our coworkers, and every human being has the right to have their dignity respected, their speech protected. They are not wrong for existing, just like you are not wrong for existing just as you are. I think there was something in the Bible that said something along the lines of, do unto others as they would do unto you. How about that, Greg Abbott? We need to stop this kind of hate speech. It is dangerous. It is un-American. And it is yet another brick on the pathway to the most horrible behavior humankind has ever borne witness to. That's all I've got for you today. Sorry, my friend Ron from Milwaukee, I couldn't get to you. I'll be back tomorrow. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together.